You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Fabulous Peltoncast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you from Boulevard Park, Washington, the home of the Peltoncast, after your Seattle Seahawks improved to 8-5 with a thrilling, wide open, freewheeling 21-7 victory on Monday Night Football over the Minnesota Vikings.
60 whole passing yards.
Wow. What a night.
They opened up the offense.
You will always tell your children, your various baby fantasy geniuses, about the time you saw Russell Wilson pass for 72 yards and win a game.
He passed for 72 yards total?
That was including sacks, I think. You're looking at net passing yardage for the team.
Oh, no. I don't look at things college-wise.
Okay.
Does the scoreboard look at things college-wise?
What do you mean?
I think the scoreboard in the stadium had it at 60 passing yards.
Probably.
Oh, wow.
No, that's not that's not college-wise. That's the opposite of college-wise.
Oh, because they would take it away from rushing yards in
yes.
college? Oh, okay.
But Russell Wilson had 72 passing yards, but the team netted 60 passing yards, 2.7 yards per pass, and still won almost by three touchdowns.
There we go. This is what football should look like in our Lord's year 2018. And I tell you what, if you would have told me going into this Monday Night Football game that one of the teams would have scored their first points in the 58th minute of the game, I would have told you, God damn it, Brian Schottenheimer, pass the damn ball!
That was very loud.
But instead,
what if I told you that one team ran 21 times for 77 yards?
It was John DeFilippo. We lamented.
No, it was not John DeFilippo. It was 100% Mike Zimmer. John DeFilippo was coaching this game and under protest.
You still, even if you're forced to run the ball, you can still run the ball well. That's not illegal.
The Vikings can't run the ball well, which is part of the problem.
They didn't run. We had talked about this last week, that I said that the Vikings would want to establish the run, which there was in the press. John, your boy, who you're saying defending under protest.
Yeah, he was saying this because he had Mike Zimmer threatening him to fire him.
You're just adding a lot of context here for something we've never heard him say.
Look, you can read between the lines here.
They didn't run the ball all that much.
They did not.
They abandoned the run pretty early. If you're going to be complaining, wow, Kirk Cousins only passed the ball 33 times. They just didn't get a lot of first downs here.
No, I mean, because of the fact that they were so shockingly atrocious passing the ball on third down. I mean, they ended up 2 of 10 on third downs, 0 of 2 on fourth downs, and that's a key story of the game.
And if I have said anything, if there is one thing that is replicable, that is a thing that sustains week to week, year to year, it is third down defense.
The Seahawks, the regression of the mean may not have worked in their favor in terms of red zone offense in a big way, in a way we'll discuss in this game, but they have defied regression of the mean when it comes to third down pass defense.
But also this defense looked good.
I couldn't quite figure out the right way to phrase this to tweet this, and also it's probably too negative for Twitter because, you know, when things are going well, Twitter doesn't want this kind of negativity. The Seahawks are the best terrible defense I have ever seen.
That would be true, yes, if they had a lucky Earl Thomas interception or two. That didn't happen today.
I mean
granted, they got one touchdown.
This is one game.
From a turnover. In this game, I mean, yes, they got a fourth down stop, but when you look at it, this is
no. I mean, their defense was overall good in this game, without question.
There just weren't what we have come to expect from the Seahawks defense is a sort of bend but don't break defense, right?
Yes.
A lot of yardage. Michael Dixon was low key bad in this game.
It wasn't his best effort.
I'm gonna say low key or high key at various times here.
Oh God, that's gonna be a theme for the podcast. Drinking game for the pod,
but. This wasn't the type of game defensively, and granted, third downs were a big part of that. Granted, there's a lot of luck that has to do with that.
I don't know. Dixon still, by the way, had netted 44 yards per punt and had 3 inside the 20. But this was not a bad performance.
Look at these. So the Vikings, most of their series ended in punts.
That is correct.
5 plays, 6 plays, 4 plays, 4 plays, 1 play at the end of the half, 6 plays, 7 plays, that was on downs, 8 plays. Things got a little bit better in the second half. They kind of turned it on near the fourth quarter. But it wasn't like they were churning the ball and then getting unlucky.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying over the course of the season, the Seahawks defense has not been good on first and second down, is third Pelton brother Ben Baldwin wrote about at The Athletic Seattle earlier this week. And they have made up for that with their performance on third down. And while the first and second down defense was better in this game, the third down defense was still even better than the defense on first and second down.
Okay.
Should we talk about the Seahawks offense?
Okay.
They dominated rushing the ball in the first half. I mean, my fear about this game, and I think that until things got out of hand in the fourth quarter, until a turning point play in the game that swung momentum to the Seahawks side.
Mm-hmm. What was that play?
The Bobby Wagner blocked field goal.
Oh, that was the play that you considered?
Yeah. I mean, the fourth down stop at the goal line was great, but the Seahawks also punted and Minnesota got the ball back at the 42, which did not come up as Booger McFarland was criticizing the decision not to kick the field goal there, the kind of field position that they got out of it.
That shocking! That shocking!
Should have resulted in another opportunity
I hope
kick a field goal.
To someday love anything as much as NFL commentators love kicking the field goal.
Oh, you got to take the points. Don't chase points. Take the points.
Yeah, yeah. And if you, I hope to ever hate anything as much as NFL commentators hate chasing the points. But I don't even know what chasing the points means. But I just,
it's going for two anytime before the very end of the game. That's what
score,
it means.
Trying to score more points.
Which,
than chasing
by the way,
points.
A toast. We don't have drinks here, but a toast to the Seahawks for their first 2-point conversion attempt of the season, which was successful.
Are you kidding me? That was,
yeah.
It was the first 2-point conversion attempt of the season or the first successful?
First attempt. They had both. Not even tried one.
Both.
Yeah.
It was a great 2-point
conversion
attempt.
It really was. They're
like,
actually,
where was that play on all of these garbage red zone series?
They've made 2-point attempts in a row now. The last one having been converted on a pass to Jimmy Graham last season against the Falcons.
That's a stat, right? Did somebody else put that out?
Loss. No.
Is that you? Man, you got to tweet that.
I didn't know if that was enough to really warrant tweeting. I looked it up.
Giving Russell Wilson a dome when it wasn't even weather-wise was enough to tweet?
Talk about that. I disagree.
When are we going to get to talking about this? There was very little weather involved.
Like, just one drop of rain is all it takes. Like, that's the other thing I wanted to tweet that seemed too mean, because I love Russell Wilson.
Wow.
Russell Wilson is the greatest.
You're low-key hating on the Seahawks after they beat the Vikings.
Ahead of Matt Hasselbeck, who raised the 12th man flag today. How excited were you?
Love it. Last week it was, what's his name? The actor from, Chris got it too. I have to give Chris some credit here.
That it was going to be Hass because he was here with the Monday Night Countdown crew?
No, last week with the Harry Dean Stanton.
Is that his name?
Yeah, yeah, that's his name.
I don't think that's his name. It's what do you Morgan, think Jeffrey Morgan? Yes, it's Jeffrey Dean Morgan. I have this here up here because I looked him up on Wikipedia because I did not know. Harry Stanton is...
Harry Dean Stanton.
Harry Dean Stanton, yes, is an actor. He passed away last year, R.I.P. Harry Dean Stanton, so he will not be raised.
Oh, so there was a person named Harry Dean Stanton.
There was.
He's the guy who's in that Nebraska movie, written by Bill Stanton, or Bob Nelson.
Bob Nelson, yes.
Anyway.
Almost Lives On, for those of you who don't get that reference.
Anyway. Chris called Jeffrey Dean Morgan raising the flag. It was like graduate of like Lake Washington High School, and Chris was like, Jeffrey Dean Morgan. And I was like, are you kidding me? I've barely ever heard of this person. B, I did not know that they were from Seattle.
Nope.
C, you knew that he went to Lake Washington High School or whatever?
That is incredible.
Yeah, no, it was an impressive
feat. He must have seen it on Twitter. He must have.
No, he didn't see it.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, Matt Hass raises the flag. I mean, you have to love everything about it. Matt Hass is an iconic player for
Absolutely.
This organization. If I had to choose one player who I consider the iconic player from that kind of 2005 run, I would say Walter Jones. And if I had to choose a second player who is an iconic player from kind of that Seahawks 2005 run, I would, of course, say Marcus Trufant. But if I had to choose a third player, it would definitely be Matt Hasselbeck.
I think the rest of the world is going with Hasselbeck ahead of Marcus Trufant. They might pick Sean Alexander.
The rest
earlier
of the world wasn't
wearing
a Truth jersey today.
That's true. Hasselbeck was my first jersey. Okay, so after they got fired up, then they saw the Seahawks effectively run the football in a way that I thought that they were going to be unable to because of the fact that this Minnesota rush defense has been so terrific all season.
Yes.
By halftime, the Seahawks had already racked up more rushing yards than 11 of Minnesota's 12 opponents this season.
Wow.
However, unfortunately,
it
turns out that running the football well does not always translate into scoring points.
I mean, there was some luck involved here. I mean, you couldn't blame running the ball and them not scoring. There were other issues at bay.
They moved the ball consistently, got it into the red zone, settled for a field goal on the first time down, then were unable to attempt a field goal, a long field goal. People were taking this too for granted, the idea that Sebastian Janikowski was going to make a 52-yard field goal before the personal foul on Simmons that knocked them out of field goal range.
Wasn't it a Fetty?
No, they called it on a Fetty in the stadium. That was
they actually called it on the Vikings.
They did
the
call
stadium.
It on the Vikings. That is correct. It was, in fact, on Simmons, though. They later corrected that.
I was going to say this is like an old school Fetty game, so I'm happy to hear that here.
Yes. So that was two opportunities. Then the third was at the end of the half where it wasn't great. They got first and goal at the one with 16 seconds left, I think. No timeouts at that point. They had used their final timeout after converting to get to the first and goal situation and therefore had to pass. And we know how it goes when the Seahawks try to pass from the one in situations where they want to make sure that the clock stops after the play. So here is my contention. Russell Wilson slips on the play, and it's because the turf was obviously so wet from the rain that fell earlier on the day. One drop of rain, that's all it takes, and all of a sudden Russell Wilson is slipping
and sliding. Throw just because
if you watch the replay, and I don't know why I'm the only one who has this take, like by the time he recovers his balance, so either he would have gone down and been sacked and the half is over, or by the time he recovers his balance, he can't plant his feet to throw. It would have been impossible for him to throw the ball out of the end zone or to the sideline, which is what he was attempting to do when it was intercepted by Anthony Barr.
I guess I agree with that mostly.
No, excuse me, Eric Hendricks. It was not
Anthony Barr. But the risk of taking the sack in that situation is better than throwing it up there because the Vikings could have returned that for a touchdown.
That is true.
So taking the sack and just
but
going
to that.
But they didn't,
because you know why?
Why?
Because Eric Kendricks slipped because the turf was so wet.
God.
Build this man a dome, for God's sakes.
It was like a slip and slide out there. There's like maybe the slightest bit of rain for about
that's all
five
it takes.
Minutes.
All it takes is one drop of rain.
All it takes.
Yes, it is. Do I need to point to you to Russell Wilson's record in the rain? And this was not.
It rains. This is a rain game.
Look,
Russell Wilson won.
He won. The team doesn't have a terrible record in the rain. They're just unbeatable when it's dry. This was maybe Russell Wilson's worst, at least passing performance.
I was going to say, he ran the ball well.
He did run the ball
well. He was unleashed running the ball.
And it could have been better.
The most important play of the game, you say it was that Bobby Wagner run. I say it was that Bobby Wagner blocked punt.
I mean, the Bobby Wagner run would have been very excited.
I say it was the Russell Wilson run.
Okay, but we're not to that point yet.
But you're just out here just saying that the most important play of the game, turning point, was happening when Bobby Wagner passed.
Yeah, well, that happened right after the Bobby Wagner blocked field goal because the Seahawks gained all of the momentum.
They worked
and therefore
tandem. They worked in tandem. Where was the play call that they had on the two-point conversion, though, when they were at the one? Can we have seen that play?
It wasn't great.
Russell Wilson slipping did affect the play. Like, I don't question that. The problem was making the play where it would have taken Mahomes-level arm strength to have thrown that ball out of bounds.
Agreed.
And Russell Wilson, though he has great arm strength, like that was not going to happen. But the other take is, those two Vikings that were there, because there were two of them that could have intercepted that pass.
Yes.
They were in a weird place.
This is a good point.
Right? Like, all things considered, those Vikings should not have been there. There's no way that they should have been near the sideline away from Russell Wilson past where the Seahawks were. So, like, I don't blame him for not expecting them to have been there because most often they're not.
I mean, I actually thought it was going to happen on that play when I saw him throw before the camera cuts to you see the multiple Vikings there. Was I thought it was going to be called an intentional grounding because it wasn't going to get back to the line of scrimmage. And that was how the half was going to run out.
There were a lot of options for bad things that could have happened for the half to run out. Very few options for
just
good
nothing
things.
Good was going to happen after he slipped. Shit happened sometimes.
He could have recovered. He tried to make a play, though, after the slip.
There was just not. The Vikings were already in his face by that point. There was nothing.
You don't
he was
think he could have
do.
Stood up after the slip? I haven't seen the replay of it, but
I've watched the replay.
And you don't think he could have stood up after the slip and just thrown it away?
No. I mean, he had to recover his balance. Like, I thought also he was going to be tackled on the ground. That seemed like the most likely scenario.
Do you think there's any chance of them getting back to the line were he sacked?
No.
All right. Well, then, whatever. Russ slipped. Whatever. Who cares?
Life goes on. And life went on. So this could have been a better game for Russell Wilson. You had the David Moore catch where he can't bring down the second foot inbounds in the end zone, which I think was ahead of that play at the end of the half, right? That was that trip into the red zone.
I think
zone,
so,
right?
Yeah. I think you're right about that.
So that would never even happen. There's also, he gets the long pass interference penalty to Tyler Lockett that doesn't show up in the passing yardage.
Which will show up on DVOA.
Although,
our Lord and Savior.
Russell Wilson also threw that ball out of bounds. It probably should have been considered uncatchable.
It was really not a great
neither here nor there.
It was a pretty, I would say, ticky-tack pass interference also.
I thought it was a fine pass interference call, but the uncatchable.
He missed, there was the one series that they had where they threw the two deep balls in a row. I think this was before the David Moore series. And they were running the ball fine. And then threw the deep ball, two deep balls in a row. And Russ kind of missed both of them pretty badly. The first one to Moore, where if he leads David Moore, it's probably a touchdown.
Yeah, no, underthrew him. Yeah.
And underthrew it. They were just balls. You know what? You know what?
One drop of rain. That's all it takes.
Russell Wilson was touched by rain. I'm coming around to this point. Coming to anything that we could say to say that Russell Wilson didn't have a bad game.
No, he did have a bad game. I'm just explaining.
To explain why Russell Wilson had a bad game.
Why?
Whatever. We ran for 200 plus yards. We didn't need it.
Well, the offense in the second half was not the greatest, I wouldn't say, at that point. But what is, they go 7 plays, 23 yards, 3 plays, 3 yards, 8 plays, 43 yards for the second field goal that where Russell Wilson was sacked on second and goal from the 10 to effectively end that series.
The only series that I considered really bad was that 3 plays, 3 yards, where I went to the bathroom.
Not counting the three plays, 0 yards after.
They were at the 2 yard line. Like,
it's
what
still not a
do?
Good series.
It wasn't a good series, but they're in a very bad situation there. The 3 plays, 3 yards, they were in a fine situation. They started with the ball at the 18. Like, they were able to move the ball, and they did nothing.
But after that series, Vikings get the ball, still with a chance to take the lead on a touchdown. And I really thought it was actually going to happen in this game because it was just so weird football. And I was thinking back to the Seahawks-Cardinals 6-6 tie on Sunday Night Football a couple of years ago. I thought the Vikings were going to score what seemed to be the go-ahead touchdown, and then Dan Bailey misses the extra point, and it's tied at 6.
I mean,
and it continues that way.
Let's just throw this out there.
Finishes that way.
I mean, just throw this out there. You're not a Seattle sports fan if you didn't expect the Vikings to score and take the lead on one of these possessions.
Absolutely. So underrated key place in this game.
Low key, you mean?
Oh, yes. After Minnesota gets
a key plays.
Subsequent to this punt that sets up Minnesota at the 42, they pick up a first down. They're at the Seattle 30, driving for, again, what could have been the go-ahead touchdown. Back-to-back pass breakups by Shaquille Griffin on passes, short passes to his side of the field. Terrific coverage from Quill in what was probably his best game of the season.
Absolutely.
At least since the very early part of the season.
He played an excellent game.
So that sets up the Dan Bailey 47-yard field goal. No sure thing. I don't know if I would have used the strategy on this one. Bobby Wagner leaps the center, which is apparently still legal as long as you don't land on them.
Provided you don't touch an offensive lineman.
Yes.
You can't touch them. There's no landing on them. I mean, yes, it's the same thing. But like, landing on them makes it seem like...
Whoa!
You can't touch any part of them. You have to leap them completely.
That's correct. But you're also not allowed to use your teammates and jump off of them as leverage. And that's what should have been called, which was in that case.
It should have been called.
Absolutely.
Yes. Didn't they call it?
No, they didn't call it. Well, they threw a flag and then they picked it up.
It was because of using his teammates for leverage?
I don't know what they were through the flag for, but they decided that it was not a penalty. It should have been a penalty. And in fact, it's a 15-yard penalty. So
Haters
it would have been a first down.
In the building. That's a 15-yard penalty?
As far as my quick looking.
It used
this
to be a 5-yard penalty.
So I think the leaping is a 5-yard penalty, but the leverage is a 15-yard penalty.
God, you wanted that called so bad.
I could be wrong here. Someone correct me if I'm wrong, but I think
one's listening. Nobody's there to correct you.
No, it's a 15-yard penalty. DeMarcus Lawrence was called for it last year. So that
last year it hasn't happened all year. Every other
no, it might have happened this year. I'm just seeing this. Just what came up on
given
Google.
Up on the strategy, except for the Seahawks.
I thought
that every other team has given up on running the ball, but they're the Seahawks
and the Vikings.
So that they only ran 13 times with Dalvin Cooks. That's a lot.
That would have given them first and 10 at either the four, like the 14 and a half at that point. So that would have been a very bad situation for the Seahawks.
Interesting. But instead, I was thinking that was a 5-yard penalty.
I thought so. Until I looked it up, I thought so too. Instead, they had all the momentum. And then, as you mentioned, on 2nd and 8, Russell Wilson scrambles. And it's like, all right, he's going to be able to pick up the first down. And then it's like, wait, there's all this space in front of him that just opened up. He keeps running. He's not running that fast, but he's going a long ways. And finally, sliding down inbounds to make sure the clock still runs. Maybe the most quintessential Russell Wilson play of all time.
Are you there, Ja? It's me, Russell. So much space for him to go. I wanted him to go to the house, though.
Me too. I thought he was going to.
I was like, you got to cut it back.
He's not going to do that in that situation. His longest run since the end of the 2014 season, tied for the third longest run of his entire career, even back to when he was fast.
I don't think this would be an exaggeration to say. I feel like I might be going a little bit too far here, but this was a Josh Allen-like run.
Wow, truly Josh Allen-esque. The Seahawks then pay off that drive eventually with Chris Carson powering his way in from the 2 to earn fans their free crisp taco at Taco Time Northwest this Tuesday. Once again.
Hello.
And then they successfully complete the 2-point conversion to make it 14-0.
And the game was over at that point.
It was. So
the Vikings start using timeouts relatively early.
Yes.
And they're basically guaranteeing that they will need an onside kick at some point.
I mean, I don't know what the alternative was. Otherwise, the alternative was you run it down to 1.5 minutes. Like, they had to hope for a missed field goal at that point. That was their only hope.
Pretty much, yes. They're saving time, hoping for a missed field goal, whatever, some sort of craziness.
And then the Seahawks tack on an insurance score when, on the subsequent possession, a fumble caused by Josh Martin. I don't know why I call it Josh Martin. That's the former UW Husky recruit who played against them this year. Jacob Martin.
Screw you, Josh Martin.
That turned out okay for UW.
He played. Oh wait, he didn't play against them for. Who did he play for?
One of the UC schools.
Okay.
And not a particularly good one.
Okay, anyway, Jacob Martin.
This was not officially credited to him because the ball just fell out of Kirk Cousins' hands without him touching him. But picked up by Justin Coleman. I'm thinking, just get down. The game is over at this point. Justin Coleman isn't thinking that. He's thinking scoop and score. And he weaves his way through the Minnesota defense for a 29-yard fumble return touchdown.
I'm thinking, where's the Salvation Army tub? Here I come, Justin Coleman. It is touchdown time. The game is officially over at that point. Whatever happened after that literally does not count. Should have been 21-0.
Does count in fantasy league.
I was going to say only counts for fantasy purposes.
Yeah, which someone out there won their fantasy league because of that Seahawks defensive touch, or won their matchup at least.
Oh, yeah. No, it was a monster. Performance by the Seahawks in fantasy.
It was a monster defensive performance altogether. So Trey Flowers got picked on a little bit, but his tackling on the edge.
Stephon
Diggs catch in particular, the deep Stephon Diggs catch.
He played it very well. If you give me that ball, I heard Pete Carroll talking about this after. So you might have to take this up with Pete Carroll.
All right, well, Pete Carroll says so.
About secondary play than Peter Clay Carroll?
No, I only think I know more about secondary player than you. Secondary play than you.
That's his name, Peter Clay Carroll, right?
Yeah.
Okay. He said that he felt like Trey played it well and just couldn't get his hand in there to tip it away.
I thought it probably was going to be pass interference as well.
Well, it was not called.
But he also caught the pass. And sometimes the ball don't lie kind of thing. Like, they're going to wait for that. Anyway, great tackling by both Shaquille Griffin and Trey Flowers against Minnesota's extremely conservative strategy in the first half.
Pretty good tackling.
Kirk Cousins dump downs. There was a couple plays.
There were a couple plays where
the Thielen first down where he slipped free.
Wish we had Richard Sherman out there.
Generally a very good job. And Trey Flowers did have that breakup before the final garbage time touchdown Minnesota got. That was a really nice athletic play.
Oh, man. When the game was still in question, right? Minnesota has the ball at like the 3-yard line before they end up not getting it. And the time that they ran with Cook and then incomplete pass on 4th and 1 from the 1, right?
Yep.
There's 1-on-1. This is right in front of us. There's Adam Thielen against Trey Flowers 1-on-1.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, like, they're scoring a touchdown on this play, and it's going to Adam Thielen. And eventually the pass did go to Adam Thielen. There was a whole bunch of mess that happened.
And Tedrick Thompson was uncovered by that. But they never really showed us what happened on that.
Talking shit to Adam Thielen after the play. I'm like, there's a little bit of like, stay in your lane, Tedrick.
There was a lot of stay in your lane.
There was also a little bit of like, hell yeah, Tedrick Thompson. Let's show these Vikings whose house they're in.
But also, we talked about the blocked field goal.
Yes.
Bobby Wagner continuing to cement his first-team All-Pro defensive season.
Give this man the defensive player of the year. I actually watched Aaron Donald play this week.
That was your checks notes?
Yeah.
Is Aaron Donald?
I don't know.
Or is it Donald Aaron? They both are first names?
I crunched the numbers, and Jared Goff had nothing to do with this. he was roasted by Mitchell Trubisky and the Chicago Bears.
Roasted. Khalil Mack had a pretty good game, didn't he?
Missed too many games. Missed too many games this year. Not a competitor for defensive player. Wait, I forgot about him. Bobby Wagner is in the mix on national TV, returning touchdowns for 99 yards.
That was not on national TV, but yes.
Blocking field goals. Bobby Wagner is doing everything that could possibly be asked of him, including getting called for phantom face mask or grabbing the
open grasping space. The helmet opening. Well, he also wasn't called for a face mask that he committed a couple plays later.
Could not see that at the stadium. I read that one on Twitter when everybody was talking about it. But that was a bullshit call on Bobby, right?
I don't know the rule as far as grasping the helmet opening, and I don't think the fact that I don't know what the penalty is makes it therefore something the referee's made up. I think it means ignorance on my part.
He didn't grasp the helmet opening, though.
He might have. I don't know the rule well enough.
That was a bad call.
So the net result of this is that the Seahawks are in command.
Wait, hold on. It's the Christmas season, right?
It is.
Am I not wearing my Michael Bennett pumping holiday sweater?
You are.
Is this not the season of giving?
Where are we going with this one?
Are you not remembering the spirit of giving that happened in this game?
What's that?
And that is giving the ball to George Fant on a completion.
Oh, I am forgetting about this. You're right.
George damn Fant with the catch, rumbling down the field, looking good. The slip and slide that was the turf at CenturyLink Field got him. But look, it also got whoever the guy was for the Vikings that was not Anthony Barr.
Eric Kendricks.
And it also got Russell Wilson. If it's going to get them, how could it possibly not have gotten George Fant? He was going to the house.
Yeah, I contend he was going to score otherwise.
Both us and George Fant contend he was scoring a touchdown on that play.
It's a little disappointing to not use that play at the goal line, but they put it on film, and now everyone's going to have to worry about that.
Bradley Soule got a touchdown this week. George Fant deserved that catch. Merry fucking Christmas. To George Fant. He's scoring a touchdown before this year is over.
They're saving that for the playoffs. Okay, so this leaves the Seahawks.
Bring on Dallas!
Whoa, let's remain calm. Seahawks at 8-5, a game and a half up now on Minnesota for the fifth seed in the NFC playoff picture, and a full two games ahead of Carolina, Philadelphia, and Washington, all tied at 6-7.
Sucks.
Out of the playoff picture. And the net result of that is if the Seahawks win next Sunday at San Francisco, they will clinch a playoff berth. And if Minnesota loses next Sunday
to the Chicago Bears,
then they're not playing the Bears.
Yes.
That's the Packers are playing the Bears. They are home for the Miami
If they
Dolphins.
Lose to the Chicago Bears.
Oh, then. I'm saying you. No. I mean, they do play the Bears in the last game of the season, but hopefully the Seahawks will have clinched before that. If the Seahawks beat the 49ers and Minnesota loses at home to the miracle Miami Dolphins, the Seahawks will lock up the fifth seed in the playoffs with 2 weeks to go, which would be bizarre.
Everybody said when they play the Chiefs on Festivus, one of these teams is going to be resting their starters because everything will be locked up. And we knew that team will be the Seattle Seahawks.
I mean, they wouldn't rest their starters.
No.
They would definitely not do that. That is not always
convenient. Can we rest our starters against the Cardinals? Can we just forfeit that game?
I'm okay with that. Things are going well.
This season feels good.
It does. Four-game winning streak.
The wild thing is, the record may end up exactly the same as it was last year.
It's possible.
Which I don't mean to get into the, you were talking about negativity. And granted, this is a better team than they were last year.
They are substantially better in terms of point differential.
Point differential, statistically, every single way they're a better team than they were last year. But it is a much worse NFC.
It's really worked out perfectly for the Seahawks. Could not be coming. Everything is coming up Seahawks right now.
And it feels good to be a Seahawks fan again. It feels good to watch these games. It's fun to watch. You go into each
game. I know, the first half wasn't always that fun.
It was weird, though. Like, if I would have watched that game last year, I would have just been so depressed through the whole game. You know?
Uh-huh.
Their record could have been exactly the same last year, and I could have watched that same game with the exact same score in the first half, and I would have said to myself, I hate this team more than I hate any football team ever. Right?
Completely reasonable.
I would have, who did I say is my most hated? Oh, Christian McCaffrey. I would have had Christian McCaffrey level hate for that Seahawks team because you just watched them and you knew that they were bad and you knew that they were bad at running the ball and you knew that they would continue to run the ball over and over and over again. This team has risen to the level of pretty okay at running the ball and they're going to run the ball over and over and over again.
I'd say after this week, solidly above average.
Wow. There we go.
Yeah.
And that's what football is about, is finding the thing that you're solidly above average at and doing it all the time.
Anything else on this game?
Oh, man. It was just, I can't describe to you how unconcerned I was through the game. And I think that's emblematic of the Seahawks team. And I haven't felt this way.
Even when the Vikings were at the 1 yard line?
No concern. I took all my faith. And I put it in the hands of Tedrick Thompson. I haven't felt this way about a Seahawks team for at least two full seasons, where I just had so much confidence in what they were doing. And that, let's say that the Vikings do score, right? If they score a touchdown, I'm like, we're coming down and scoring and taking the lead.
We're very different people, you and I.
I'm there. I'm feeling this. I'm feeling what's happening. And you, I'm riding. I've watched the Cable Thanos videos, right? I'm riding this wave. You're there saying, no, 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 no. I'm there saying, I could come up with anything there.
Was it yes, 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 yes?
I want to sleep better than that.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm feeling what's happening right now.
You're there
now.
Saying, shoddy, 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 shoddy.
And you have had so little feel for this team all year. You've said they're going to lose, they're going to lose, they're going to lose, they're going to lose. And you know what? They've won all of those games. Every single one.
So they're going to lose the 49ers game?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, many of them. You told me the Detroit Lions were going to beat them. You told me that the Panthers were going to beat them. You told me that the Vikings were going to beat them.
I didn't say that.
And at none of those points did those teams come even close in those games.
Again, Seahawks up 6-0. Minnesota with the ball first and goal. Yeah.
Graham Gano missed field goal. But there's something happening.
Down 10 points, 4th and 10. Throw a touchdown. Oh, had it all the way. I think it was only 7 at that point.
There's something happening here right now with this team that we have not experienced in years, and there's so much energy and confidence that they're feeling. The defense is only getting better.
Yeah, that's usually offense, when things go bad.
That is not usually when things go bad.
I guess it's usually when things go bad when Bruce Arians comes to town.
We just need to not have to rely on any of the last 2 weeks. Because week 17, if they have to win that game to get into the playoffs,
I mean,
have fun in the playoffs, Washington, Carolina, Philadelphia.
Functionally, there's actually a pretty good shot they'd make the playoffs at 8-8 at this point.
We were talking about that.
But let's win next week in San Francisco.
They're going to go 8-8, make the playoffs, and people are going to be like, teams turned around. Completely different. Totally different.
Okay. Well, we will have a full preview of the Seahawks trip to Santa Clara to face the 49ers. On this week's regular Pelton Cast, will be pushed back a day until Thursday because of Tristan's travel schedule. Until then,
thanks for listening.
Thanks.